Joan of Arc was born the daughter of poor farmers in France. At that time, her country was in the middle of what would come to be known as the Hundred Years' War. Imagine what it was like to live in a country that had been at war for that long. It would mean that the fighting started when you were a little baby, and that it would not end until your grandchildren were born, or longer. Nowhere you lived or worked would be safe. Soldiers would fill the streets of your town. There would be no end to the death you witnessed, or to the injuries the people you loved might sustain. When Joan was 13, in the midst of the Hundred Years' War, she began to have visions. In them, she saw herself speaking to the leader of France, Charles, the king's son. She dreamed of riding a horse into battle and helping to end the war. Joan believed that these waking dreams were divine messages from Saint Michael and Saint Catherine. She said that the saints told her she would play a role in saving France and urged her to seek an audience with Charles, who had been named Dauphin, or heir to the throne. A lot of people thought Joan was crazy. How could a teenage girl win a battle that grown men had fought and lost for decades? How could the daughter of poor farmers possibly have advice about how to run the country for the son of the king? But Joan was resolute, which means she was fiercely determined. She imagined herself in battle, and she knew she would be victorious. She said, "All battles are first won or lost in the mind." Joan envisioned her future, then moved forward bravely to turn her dreams into reality. She went to see Robert de Baudricourt, a local leader who supported Charles. At first, he did not know what to make of her, a teenage girl who professed that she must see the man who would be king. But with the village's support, he gave Joan his blessing. She cut her hair short and dressed in men's clothing. On horseback, she made the 11-day journey across enemy lines to Chinon, where Charles's court resided. But before Joan was allowed to meet with him, she had to overcome one more obstacle. Charles devised a test. He would dress in common clothes and stand in a crowd of men. If Joan could pick him out of the crowd, he would grant her a meeting. Joan lived at a time where there was no photography or technology of the kind. And Joan was poor. She had never seen an oil painting. There would have been no way for her to know what Charles VII looked like. Yet she was able to pick him out of the crowd. This led Charles to believe that perhaps there was something divine about Joan, and thus perhaps there was a purpose to her mission. She met with Charles and convinced him he needed to take the oath to be king as soon as possible, that the future of France depended on it. She also convinced him to give her a horse and armor and let her ride with soldiers, all men, into battle. It was an incredible request, one that no one would reasonably grant. Men fought in wars, women did not. But Joan resisted the constraints of her time. Charles allowed her to ride into battle. Joan triumphed in the siege of Orleans. And when Charles VII was crowned the King of France, she stood by his side. In 1430, Joan was sent into battle again, this time to Compiègne, where she fought against the Burgundians. There, she was thrown off a horse and captured. Joan was held for several months as her captors tried to sell her off to England. The British thought it might make good propaganda to parade the teenage savior of France into their prisons. Her captors interrogated her, but she never revealed any of France's secrets. They threatened her for months on end with rape and torture. But again, Joan resisted. She tied her uniform tightly around herself with dozens of cords. She protected her body and showed them the force of her will.